Do you ever get mad? You ever see things, go through situations that really make you want to chew nails? They bring about frustration, they bring about anger, bring about situations that really make you frustrated and boiling. And yet to realize, typically, what does anger fuel? We're going to go through and look at some things this morning as we continue trying to grapple with things that we really need to focus in on as God's people. I want to start by reading to you some proverbs. I'm going to go through them rather quickly. You can turn to them if you're really quick on your fingers. But I want you to listen to some of these things together. Typically, whenever you think of anger, maybe you think of what kind of boils on the inside in terms of to provoke or to rouse anger or wrath. Anger is on the inside, and if it keeps on building up enough pressure and you don't realize the right motive to take in the moment, you'll start to lash out in terms of even wrath toward other people. Sometimes it comes out in words. Sometimes you can even see it on someone's face before they even say anything. And yet I want you to think about anger in these terms of what is going to come out of the Proverbs. Here's Proverbs chapter 14, verse 29. It says, "He who is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who is quick-tempered exalts folly." If we're going to be a people who are slow in anger, it's going to be because we have an understanding of the moment. You can't just walk into it and go, however I feel is how I'm going to respond. He says, someone who is slow to anger has great understanding. And then he flips it to make the statement, but he who is quick-tempered exalts folly. You realize this is someone who is just going to walk off into things that are really, really foolish really quickly. If you can't control your temper, if you can't control anger, you're going to walk right into folly. Proverbs 19:11 says, a man's discretion makes him slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook a transgression. If you want to be slow of anger, there's going to have to be some discretion to know, here they are, they're treating me in a way that's not kind, they're treating me in a way that's not fitting, they're not even showing proper honor toward one another. And he says here, he says, it is his glory to overlook a transgression. To go, I'm not being treated in a way that's right, but I'm going to have discretion so that I'm slow to anger. Because so often, whenever we're not treated the way we want to be, that's when we get angry the most. Which shows you, anger is really centered in on self. It's not centered in on the things of God. Then, Proverbs 22, 24, and 25. Here's some of the difficulties that come with those who are full of anger. It says, do not associate with a man given to anger, or go with a hot-tempered man, or you will learn his ways and find a snare for yourself. Oftentimes, people who are so angry get isolated. And God is giving the instruction here through Solomon to say, look, don't associate with angry people. And he says, the reason is, and speaking to his son Rehoboam specifically, who's going to be the future king, he says, if you hang out with angry people, don't be surprised if you learn to be angry too. How many times do angry people want to draw others out to go, aren't you really upset about what this is going on here? And you go, well, yeah, I guess I should be. Over time, it starts to erode us to the point where now we become angry people. We become even hot-tempered people. And you go, it can come on in just a flash. So you realize anger can really make people want to separate from you. So you understand, if you're going to be really volatile in how you go about life, don't expect people to want to draw near to you. How are you going to show them the things of God if they don't even want to be around us? Then another proverb, 30, verse 33, says, for the churning of milk produces butter, and pressing the nose brings forth blood. So the churning of anger produces strife. Maybe as a young person, you could take a bowl or a bottle with a screw cap on it. You can put whole milk in there and you can churn it. You can just roll it back and forth across the floor and it'll churn up butter just from turning it constantly. He says, if you punch somebody in the nose, what do you expect to happen? Hope you expect it to get bloody. Hope you miss. But anyway. But the idea here is, he says, so the churning of anger produces strife. If you let anger stay around inside of you and keep on going, you'll bring an animosity and a strife among one another. So if you don't deal with anger, you'll isolate yourself. He says, you'll stir up strife among people and separate people who should be together. And you go, and how did that come? Because there's no discretion, and because we're not going to work off of understanding. And to realize, then he goes on from there in Proverbs 29:22 to say, an angry man stirs up strife, and a hot-tempered man abounds in transgression. He says, if you're going to let anger take over, just understand, you're going to keep on sinning over and over again. You're going to transgress the proper boundaries, and you will transgress across the top of people. You will start to do things that are not right before God. So, what does anger fuel? It depends on what you do with it. If you can be slow to anger and you can have understanding, you can do things that are right before God, and God can use you. Even in a situation that is quite difficult, to find someone who's going to be slow to anger, to bring about what's good behavior before God, pleasing to Him. As opposed to, if we're going to let anger rage, we'll separate people with strife. We'll be people who are constantly going after transgression. We'll alienate people and even maybe even feel justified in doing it, which is even worse. Now, you come here to Matthew chapter 5, look at verse 21. And here's Jesus speaking to all these disciples who climbed up the mountain just to hear Him teach. And He makes this statement. He says, you have heard that the ancients were told, you shall not commit murder, and whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. He says, you've heard this from long ago. God gave this command from Mount Sinai to Moses and to all of Israel. He says, you shall not commit murder. And you can understand people here going, well, I've never really killed anybody. I've thought about it, but I've never actually killed anybody. And then I want you to notice he goes on and says, and whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. And liable really meaning be guilty in the court. If you kill someone, you should expect, and notice here the idea is murder. It's something you have actually planned and thought about and done. This is not something of accidental situation. He says, I let myself churn on anger, and look at what it brings about. And I want you to think about this. Even way back in Genesis chapter 4 with Cain and Abel, where Cain offers up a sacrifice that's not pleasing to God, and Abel offers up a sacrifice of his firstlings and the best of what he has to offer, and God is pleased with him. Cain sees this, and he doesn't just get a little angry. It says in Genesis 4 that he gets very angry. And you could actually see it on his face. You can probably picture what it looks like when somebody gets angry. You can actually see it on their face, even before they speak. And listen to what God says to Cain. He tells him specifically, then the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? What a great question. And why was Cain so angry? My worship's not acceptable. He says, I've offered up an offering, but it's not acceptable to God. He says, why are you angry? He says, and why is your countenance fallen? Why is your face looking the way it does? He says, if you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door and its desire is for you, but you must master it. He says, when anger comes in, you're going to have to decide. What are you going to do in the moment? And it's not as if you're going to say, hey, I'd like a time out from life. Can I have 5 minutes to think my way through this? In the heat of the moment, you're going to have to decide, what am I going to do? Is it going to be glory to overlook a transgression when someone is sinning against me and I'm getting angry? Am I going to have some understanding and some wisdom? Here's God bringing right before Cain. He says, why are you angry? He says, you have two choices. He says, you can do well, and you can listen to God and offer up what He desires by faith. He says, and if you do that, will your countenance not be lifted up? He says, but if you don't do well, if you just keep on churning on this anger, and he's very angry already, he says, do you know that sin is crouching at the door? Sin is sitting there behind, I think, about a solid wood door, but you can think about whatever kind of door you want. Sin is there just waiting for you to let anger keep on going. And if you let anger continue further without controlling it, he says, sin will master you. Your anger will just keep on being there. And it will continue to be a problem in your life year after year after decade after decade. And the choice is yours. God lays that out to Cain. And how does Cain do with that? He goes out in the field and he talks to his brother, Abel, a righteous man, and he kills him. Anger can take you all the way to the point where you will take someone else's life. And that's exactly what Cain did. Sometimes people will be angry at you for doing what is right. And you have to understand, you can't control that. You don't want to say, well, I'll just be as wicked as you are, and then you'll be fine with me. And so you see how this plays out. Here in Matthew chapter 5, notice how it continues on, verse 22. Jesus says, but I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. He's saying, it's not just about murder. He says, you need to think about what's going on in your heart. How are you going to respond to somebody whenever they treat you in a way that is not good and not beneficial to you? Whenever they're rude and they're going to speak out against you even when you're not around and you hear about it? He says, are you just going to stew on anger? He says, if you're going to let anger hang around, he says, you're going to end up being guilty before the court. He says, you can count on it. Because your anger is not going to go, oh, I'm just going to recognize the boundary now. Here I've stewed on it and dwelled on it so long, and now the moment comes where I can get even and to go, oh, it's okay. I've controlled my mind. Waited too long. Now sin is devoured. And now there's a master to my own anger. Now, notice how he continues on from here. He says, and whoever says to his brother, you good for nothing, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court. Different translations may have a different word for you good for nothing. It's actually a term that goes back way long ago. It's the term raca, which literally is about you're just empty between the ears. There is just nothing going on in your head, is there? And what anger does is it starts to devalue people. Well, this person is stupid, so I don't have to worry about controlling my anger with them. Now you're just going to drop another boundary line. And notice he says how far this will go. You'll be guilty before the Supreme Court, which for the Jews was the Sanhedrin Court. He says, and no matter how high you go, you're going to be guilty. And if you were guilty before the Supreme Court, the Sanhedrin, oftentimes the penalty was death, but we would say capital punishment. Not always, but sometimes, by the hand of two or three witnesses. You ever been in one of those situations where you see somebody explode right in front of you and you go, I don't want to be here. This is not a pleasant situation. And Proverbs encourages us by saying, don't go just jump into the middle. You'll be bitten by both sides. He says, you better wait for people to cool down a little bit. And isn't it embarrassing? Don't you feel embarrassed for them? Go look at what they're doing. They don't realize the shame they bring on themselves in the moment. And what are they getting angry over? Now, notice what else is here. It goes even further beside you good for nothing. He says, and whoever says you fool should be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell. This idea of fool is where we get our English word moron. You are a moron. He says, you start saying that to people, you're saying, you don't even have the character to be able to bring things together in your heart. It literally goes together with the idea of, you've even thought about this and you still do what's foolish. What hope is there for you? And sometimes when people get that way, what do you want to do? I want to tell them off. I want to say, do you realize how big of an idiot you're being right now? But if we start thinking that way to devalue their value before who we are, he says, you're going so far as it will cost you eternally. He says, you'll be guilty enough to go down into the fiery hell, which is really the word for Gehenna, which was a trash heap that burned in death outside of Jerusalem. But it's talking about something that's eternal. Now, he brings all these things together to say, have you considered what you do when you get angry? Because it can cost you not only in the present, it can cost you eternally. Are you content with just churning anger and letting it stay there? Because it'll explode into strife. It'll come out in terms of wrath and even in words. And look at how far Jesus goes. Look at the next verse, verse 23. He says, therefore, since you know these things, that anger is what leads to murder. And if you can deal with anger, you don't ever have to worry about murder. But if you don't deal with anger, look at the relationship God's going to have with you. Verse 23. Therefore, if you are presenting your offering at the altar, and that would be in the temple, he says, and there remember that your brother has something against you. Here I am, someone who's so full of anger, I've been spouting it out at other people. He says, and now my brother has something against me, but here I'm coming to worship God to the temple, and I'm bringing my gift, which is a gift offering. It wasn't like a sin offering or a trespass offering. It was saying, God, thank you so much for this relationship that we share in. I want to give you a gift. And as you go, you remember that your brother has something against you because of your behavior with anger. Look at the next verse. He says, leave your offering there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and present your offering. I don't want your gift of worship until you go be reconciled with your brother. Now think about that. God's saying, if you can't learn to love people, I don't want your offering. If anger explodes in your life, if you're okay with anger being allowed to stay and to churn within the heart, he says, I don't want your offering. Your worship won't be accepted. Who does this sound like from Genesis? Isn't that what Cain's problem was? He came to offer up an offering to God, and God wouldn't accept it. And it made him very angry. And did God accept his offering? He sure didn't. If we're people who are content with anger raging inside of us, to where it comes out, God's saying, your worship will not be acceptable to me. I want you to think about this seriously. Couple, a husband and a wife, they get into it Sunday morning and they leave the house angry to come to worship. Is God going to accept their worship? You apply the verses, what do you think? Serious, isn't it? We can't learn to love each other. God's saying, I don't want your offering. I don't want your gift. He says, go, leave your offering there at the altar. Go be reconciled to your brother. Now, it's not always possible. I'm not talking about the husband-wife example so much anymore. But if you think about Romans chapter 12, it specifically talks about and says, if possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. There are times where you have forgiven, you have done everything you know to do, and someone will not forgive you. He's saying, that's on them, but you still have to walk in love. But sometimes peace is not possible because of the other person. But you do what you can do to the best of your ability. And you realize, and then you can come and you can offer your gift. Now, you see what happens whenever anger fuels this whole situation. But I want to show you the flip side. What happens when you control your anger in the midst of difficulty? Look over at Mark chapter 3, page 996 in the Pew Bible. Mark chapter 3, look at verse 1. Talking about Jesus, it says, he entered again into a synagogue, and a man was there whose hand was withered. So here's a setting within a Jewish worship assembly. Verse 2. They were watching him to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath so that they might accuse him. Notice what's going on inside of the minds of these people who are there. It'll tell us who they are here in a minute. They're looking at Jesus. There's a man with a withered hand. They say, oh, is he going to heal on the Sabbath? Then we can accuse him, which tells you what's been going on inside of them. Verse 3. He said to the man with the withered hand, get up and come forward. He says, get up and come forward. And here's Jesus, a man with a withered hand who's drawn up. Verse 4. And he said to them, is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath, to save a life or to kill? He says, he's asking the group. Here's a man with a withered hand. He's come forward. He says, you tell me, what would be lawful? He says, is the law about doing good or harm on the Sabbath? And he asked them a question, and notice what their response is. They don't say, oh, we should stop him because that would be a sin. We love him so much. They're like, nope, we're getting just what we want. We want to be able to accuse him because we don't like him very much. You'll see how far it goes. Notice, they just stayed there and they kept silent. Didn't say a word. Verse 5. After looking around at them with anger. Here's that moment. How does Jesus handle anger? It's not that he never got angry. He got angry. But what's he going to do in the moment? What's his anger going to fuel? Well, let's see. He looked around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart. He's grieved because they are so calloused of heart. They would not let love take over. They wouldn't look at this man with a withered hand to go, this would change every day of the rest of his life if he could now use his hand. Instead, they look at this whole situation with, if we can just get him to heal on the Sabbath, we can take him outside and stone him to death. We can find a reason to accuse him. He said to the man, stretch out your hand, and he stretched it out, and his hand was restored. Look at what Jesus does in his anger. He's still willing to be loving toward this man and to do something that no one else could do. You realize in the moment when you get angry, you're going to have to decide what to do. First of all, you have to think, why am I angry? Is this just because of me being self-centered? Is this just me because of not getting what I want or not being treated the way I want? Am I getting angry because I'm getting frustrated and tired and I'm not being patient? Is there a reason I can't speak kind words? Love is patient and love is kind. Love is your best friend whenever you get angry. If you can decide, how can I best be loving in this situation? Because that's the one who's slow to anger. That's the one who has discretion and understanding. Here's Jesus who sees the situation. There's some here who are so hard of heart, it won't matter what happens. It's not going to change anything. But I'm going to do what's loving toward this man, and I'm going to help him. And sure enough, he does what's right. And then notice the response he gets from these men who are calloused in heart. They're hard-hearted, not open-minded. Verse 6, the Pharisees went out and immediately began conspiring with the Herodians against him as to how they might destroy him. Look at where their anger drives them towards. They're like, and how can we eliminate him? How can we accuse him? In the moment when anger hits, you're going to have to decide. Am I going to handle it well and the Lord's going to take care of me in this situation? Or is sin crouching at the door and it is ready to master me? Because that's what you're about to decide in those moments. And here's Jesus who's already said, if you're going to let anger be what stirs inside of you, and you're not going to make friends again, you're not going to reconcile with the one that you sinned against, he says, we cannot have a relationship. That ends it. I'm not going to accept your worship. That's how serious it is. Do we really see it as being that serious? Now, I want to show you another passage. Look over at 1 John chapter 4, page 1220. 1 John chapter 4. Look down at verse 18. We know we have to be a people who are quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. We know that the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. So how are we going to make sure we control our anger so that we can do what's righteous in the moment? We can do what honors Jesus. If you notice what's here in 1 John chapter 4, look down at verse 18. It says, there is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear because fear involves punishment. And the one who fears is not perfected in love. There are going to be times where you get so frustrated, where you get so boiling mad, and you're going to have to decide, do I want perfect love to dwell in me? Do I want love to be perfected in me? Perfect love casts out fear. Because so often in those moments, we feel like, if I don't stand up for me, who will? He says, you're going to have to cast that fear out. And you're going to have to trust the Lord to take care of you. Because he might just use you for the sake of his purpose. Because when people got angry and mad and indignant against Jesus, what did they want to do with him? They wanted to kill him. And there was an angry mob that took Jesus to the high priest, to the Sanhedrin council, and they found an innocent man guilty. They handed him over to the Romans. And the Romans, even though Pilate said, I find no guilt in him, because of the anger and the rage of the mob who yelled out, crucify him, crucify him. Pilate handed him over to be crucified after being scourged. And Jesus died his death for the sake of angry, raging people. And he died for our anger too. When it gets out of control, when it doesn't move in the right direction, when we fear what will happen to us, because of other people's rage and anger. You notice Jesus didn't fear that? He was ready to die. He was ready to bear that penalty because he knew victory was his. He knew 3 days later he was going to raise from the dead. He knew that 40 days later he was going to be sitting at the right hand of God, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. When are we going to learn our anger does not achieve the righteousness of God? We're going to have to give ourselves over. Jesus died on a hill for people of anger. But the victory will only be ours if we let go of letting anger control us. If you notice what's here as it continues in verse 19, he says, we love because he first loved us. We're going to have to learn to love like he did. We can't do it our way. We can't say, I'm tired, I'm frustrated. Was Jesus tired? Was he frustrated? Was he in agony? And yet he continued to hang suspended between heaven and earth for you and me. He would not let anger control him. He instead chose a perfect love that casts out fear. And we love because he first loved us. We're going to have to look at him intently. Verse 20, if someone says, I love God and hates his brother, he is a liar. Don't even say that you love God and you hate your brother. Because God knows our hearts. He says, for the one who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. Notice it doesn't say would not or should not. It says cannot. It is impossible for those who walk around angry, hating their brothers and their sisters, to genuinely claim to love God. And John's telling us, and John was an eyewitness of the love of Christ. He says, you can't claim to love God and then curse those who are made in his image. There's James chapter 3. Verse 21. And this commandment we have from him, that the one who loves God should love his brother also. When you get angry, you have a choice. Am I going to let anger control me and sever me from this relationship with God to where my worship is not even going to be accepted? Because I'm not even going to address it. Or am I going to choose when I'm angry to work off of patience and kindness? And I want to seek how to love these people. Because that is what shines so brightly in the midst of a dark world. Those who love one another like Jesus loved us. Are we willing to die on that hill to love God? Because that's the choices we're making every day. Whether husband and wife, whether parents with children, whether co-workers or neighbors or your enemies. Jesus showed us how to perfectly love. Let's strive to love like Jesus does. And let anger lead us to imitating Jesus rather than looking to destroy others.